Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Bharadhari Chasharanandana Rajajana Ranjana Chasharanandana Rajajana Ranjana Chamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Shtotra Satashi Shimad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Shtotra Satashi Shimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Sham Kundradha Kunigidi Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Nabadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamana Mai Ki Jai Sri Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Brindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22, Text 17 Maitreyo Vacha Pratos Yeah, that's what it says. Pratos tat suktam akarnya saram sushtu mitam madhu smayamana iva pritya kumaraha pratyuvacha ha Maitreyo vacha pratostat suktam akarnya saram shushtu mitam madhu smayamana iva pritya kumara pratyuvacha Maitreyo vacha Pritos tat suktam akarnya saram sushtu mitam madhu smayamana iva pritya kumara pratyuvacha Tastut suttama karnya. Shushtu mitamatu. Smayamana iva pritya. Kumara pratyuvachaha. Svetreyu vacha. Mayamana iva pritya kumara pratyuvacha Mayamana uvachaha Dostatsuktamakarnya Svaram sushtu mitam matu Smayamana iva pritya Kumara pratyuvachaha Maitreyo vacha tostat suptama karnya Maitreyo vacha. The great sage Maitreya continued to speak. Pratoho of King Prithu. Tad, that. Suktam, Vedic conclusion. Akarnya, hearing. Saram, very essential. Shushtu, appropriate. Mitam, minimized. Madhu, sweet to hear. Smayamanaha, smiling. Iva, like. Pritya, out of great satisfaction. Kumaraha, celibate. Pratyuvacha, replied. Ha, thus. The great sage Maitreya continued, Thus Sanat Kumar, the best of the celibates, after hearing the speech of Prithu Maharaj, which was meaningful, appropriate, full of precise words, and very sweet to hear, smiled with full satisfaction and began to speak as follows. What's his program? Purport. Krishna. So exact, this microphone. Prithu Maharaj's talks before the Kumaras were very laudable because of so many qualifications. A speech should be composed of selected words, very sweet to hear, and appropriate to the situation. Such speech is called meaningful. All these good qualifications are present in Prithu Maharaj's speech because he is a perfect devotee. It is said, Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarvargunais tatra samasute suraha. For one who has unflinching devotional faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is engaged in his service, all good qualities become manifest in his person. Thus the Kumaras were very much pleased, and Sanat Kumar began to speak as follows.
can we whisper? That's good.
Om Ajnana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shavakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadhati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurang Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savathutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Dadita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vash Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Maitreya Uvacha Pritos Tat Suktama Karnya Saram Sushtu Mitam Madhu Smayamana Iva Pritya Kumara Pratyuvacha. Suktama Karnya Su-uktam very nicely said. Uktam means said, and su means very well, very nicely. So these statements by Prithu Maharaj were very nicely stated in accordance with Vedic conclusions. Pritos tat suktam akarnya saram shushtu mitam madhu. So the speech was very much appreciated, saram, very substantial, substantial or essential. It wasn't fluffy, it wasn't superficial or padded out with unnecessary, unimportant themes, words. Saram, just like cream. The cream is the very most substantial part of the milk. If you've got cream, then you've got concentrated milk. So saram, just taking the essential points, and therefore very substantial. If you take just what's essential, it will be very substantial. And shushtu, appropriate. You may say something substantial, but you have to say the right thing at the right time. The Kumaras were saintly persons, so the king inquired from them about spiritual realization, about how to get free from the clutches of material existence. He didn't ask about business or even about their health and welfare. He asked about the most suitable topics about which to inquire from such rarely encountered saintly persons. So his speech was suitable. And mittam. Mittam means concise, short. It wasn't a long speech, half-hour speech, taking 2 hours to say what you could do in 2 minutes. Concise. That's another good quality. The Kaviraj Goswami also says that essential truth presented concisely is true eloquence. The professional writers take pleasure in cutting down their words to the minimum. If they've written 5 pages, they'll try to cut it down to 3. If they've got 3 pages, they'll try to get it cut it down to 2. 2 pages, 1. 1 page, a paragraph. A paragraph, a sentence. They'll try to cut everything down. No unnecessary words, no unnecessary paragraphs, no unnecessary pages. Cut it down to the essential statement. That's called concise. No extra baggage. Just essential. Otherwise, talking on and 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 on, it becomes tiresome. Even if what you're saying has some substance to it, when you take 2 hours to say what you could say in 2 minutes, that's not very good speaking. In America, we say, get to the point. Or the other way to say it impatiently is, bottom line. You know, and in accounting, you have a sum of figures, and don't take me through the whole sum of figures, just what's on the bottom line. How much money do I have? Or how much money do I owe? So someone impatiently will say, so, bottom line. Or if he's not impatient, if he's concise, he'll say, bottom line, and he'll tell you what the bottom line is. He doesn't wait for you to ask. So in that way, get to the point. There's no need to dance around and go in circles. Just get to the point. So Prithu Maharaj did that. He got right to the point. A king also has to be expert in getting to the point. He can't waste time talking all day or hearing from someone all day. He'll want that, you have a problem? Tell me quickly. Get to the essence. Don't tell me your whole life story. If you have a problem for me to solve, tell me the problem. I'll solve your problem. Or if he has an order to give, he gives the order straight. He doesn't go on and on and on. Just do this. That's administrative capability. So in administration, in literature, conciseness. So mittam, no wasting words. And madhu, he spoke very sweetly. You may speak few words, and they may be essential. They may be even on topic. But if they're said in a rough, rude way, then it's not very pleasing to hear. It's not very pleasing to hear. Therefore, part of the art of speaking is to speak in a sweet way, in a pleasing way. That's also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Where is that? 17:27. 15. What? Not 15. No. Let's see where this is.
Anudvega karam vak, it's 17.
Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat. Svadhyaya bhyasanam chayava vanmayam tapu uchate. There are three kinds of austerity. Austerity of the mind, austerity of the body, and austerity of speech. And each of these has, again, three divisions: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So speaking in goodness is described here. Anudvega karam vakyam, speaking in such a way as not to agitate others. What is that? Naivam nodvijate loko, loko nodvijate chaya. No, it's 12. Let's see. Yasman nodvijate loko, lokan nodvijate chaya. Arshamarsha bhayodveg, armukta yas sachamepriya. A devotee is not agitated by others, and he doesn't agitate others. Yasman nodvijate loko, lokan nodvijate chaya. So, satyam, anudvega karam vakyam. He doesn't speak in such a way as to agitate others. Of course, sometimes speech is meant to agitate others. Good speech. If your house is on fire, just to be very sweet and say, you might be very interested to know that your beautiful house is being enveloped in the most attractive flames. That's not appropriate. In such a circumstance, you want to get the... Hey! Fire. Yeah, you want to get him out of bed. You want to get him running out the door. You want to get him going. Or if he's about to pick up something that's hot or high voltage, then you may... Hey, are you crazy or something? You want to anything to stop him. That may not be the time for sweet words. Similarly, sometimes to awaken someone sleeping in the illusion of Maya, strong words are needed. Krishna says, Namam duskritano mudha prapadyante naradhama maya pratagyana asura bhavamashrita. These are not sweet words. Of course, for devotees, they're relishable. But if you're on the receiving end, being called a mudha, an ass, a fool, lowest among men, bewildered, then it may not be so sweet. But medicine can't always be sweet. To awaken the sleeping man, sometimes strong words are needed. But it's not that one should always go out of one's way to find the most bitter, agitating words. There's a time for that, but there's also a time for sweet words, especially when we meet a superior, then sweet words are wanted to the an enlightened person. A cultured devotee like Prithu Marsh isn't going to say, okay, tell me what's going on, get to the point, what's going on in spiritual reality, I want to know it all in 5 minutes or less, okay? He takes a humble position, and he's going to speak very sweetly to such superior enlightened souls. Even though he's a king and he's very powerful, even though he's the Shakti Avesh avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still he'll take a very humble position and speak very sweetly, madhu. Satyam priyahitam triyat. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam triyat. Austerity of speech is to say that which is not agitating, which is true, and which is meant for the welfare of others. Svadhyaya abhyasanam chaiva, or to recite Vedic literature, this is also austerity of speech. So Madhu, he spoke very sweetly, and after hearing this, these very fine words spoken by Prithu Maharaj, essential, substantial, appropriate, and to the point, Sanat Kumar was very pleased. Pritya, he was very satisfied. And Smayamana, therefore he was smiling. It's not that he was smiling because he'd been praised, but because he'd been asked the most suitable questions in a most suitable way by a most suitable person. The devotee becomes pleased when he has an opportunity to glorify Krishna or to speak about the transcendental reality. Mm-hmm. When people are asking him mundane questions or simply talking to hear themselves talk, it's not very enlivening. It's just, all right, we have to tolerate everyone. And generally people are like that. They're not very interested in the ultimate goal of life. They want to know if you can read their palm. They want to know about their future. They want blessings for their child's examination. They want all sorts of material interests satisfied. Manusyanam sahasreshu. Out of thousands among men, hardly anyone is actually interested in the truth. So when the Kumaras met Prithu Maharaj and heard such suitable questions from such a suitable person, they were very pleased. Now Sanat Kumar would have the opportunity to speak to a qualified hearer the knowledge that he possessed. So Smayamana, now it's going to be good. When there's, just like when there's a good mridanga player, a good kartal player, then the kirtan leader becomes very happy. And there's an enthusiastic group of devotees, everyone who wants to chant. Well, for the kirtan leader, it's very nice. Or if you're giving a class and everyone's very eager to hear, then you feel very happy. If it's a group of people who've been forced to come, who don't really want to be there, who, out of social obligation or a feeling of scriptural necessity or public appearance, they come, then it's not very enlivening. But when there are people who are eager to hear, who are serious about the subject matter, qualified hearers, then naturally the speaker becomes happy. When Lord Brahma was questioned by Narad Muni about Narad Muni said, you're the supreme person in the universe, but it seems like you pray to someone higher than you. You're depending on someone higher. So are you the highest or is there somebody else? So then Brahma became very pleased. Yes, I get the chance to speak about Krishna. When the Yamadutas came to Yamaraj and said, we met these, I don't know what kind of people they were, but they were the four-armed people and blue, and we were arresting this absolute badmash, and they came and they prevented us and they stopped us, and we thought that your authority was the absolute authority in the universe, that you're the chief of police, and whatever you tell us to do, we can do it. Whatever
we have authority because we're acting on your behalf, and now we've been stopped by these other people. And who are these other people anyway? And are you the last word or not? So Yamaraj became very pleased because he doesn't get such opportunities down there to do Harikatha. But when his servants asked about the Vishnu Dutas and about the relative and absolute authority, so then he was very happy. Now I'm going to get a chance to speak about Krishna. So here also, Sanat Kumar was very pleased because now he's going to get the opportunity to speak about spiritual realization to a very suitable person who's asked the most essential questions and who's eager to hear. Okay, any questions? Mm-hmm. Yes, second mic.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for such a nice class. Maharaj, I was reading first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I was seeing that in the later chapters of Srimad.
You've seen what?
In the later chapters of first canto.
The later chapters of first canto, yes.
So Prabhupada writes purports to...
You see... When you're speaking to one another, you've all been taught English here in India, and you all understand one another. When you speak to people from foreign countries like America and England, you have to articulate your words. That is to say, separate one from the other by pronouncing them very clearly and distinctly. And that way, we foreigners will understand what you're saying.
Yes, Maharaj.
So... Bolia.
Yeah, so I was reading Prabhupada's purports on like chapters like Pandavas retiring timely and birth of Parikshit Maharaj and other chapters. So in Prabhupada's purports, I saw that Sukadeva Goswami, when he gives the verse, and Suta Goswami, when he speaks the verse, they were speaking about the essence of devotional service. While in Prabhupada's purports, he speaks a lot about social factors, political factors, he speaks of characters on Mahabharat in length, and he speaks about the culture in length. So I was little doubt, it seemed little contradictory to me that how Prabhupada, on one hand, when he was speaking on Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna speaks about karma, jnana, and all that, Prabhupada speaks about bhakti, he gives purports of bhakti, and on the other hand, when Sukadeva Goswami is speaking about devotional service, Prabhupada is speaking about political factors, social factors, cultural factors, economic factors, and all that. Can you explain this apparent contradiction?
Yes. Bhagavad Gita is ABC. So when Prabhupada is explaining Bhagavad Gita, he has to also say that it's going up to this higher point. And the Bhagavatam is the postgraduate stage, so he has to make sure that we've got our ABCs in place so that we understand it. For to properly understand Bhagavatam, especially for a Western audience, we need the framework. We need the context. We need to understand the ideas presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, not simply in isolation as some theory or as something from a foreign culture. We need to understand how it relates to practical affairs, how everything is connected with the subject matter. So Prabhupada gives the framework, just like a frame when there's a picture. What is the need of the frame? You don't need a frame. The picture is there. But the frame focuses your eyes on the picture. It gives the nice context for the
picture. So Prabhupada's framing the subject matters, that were the subject matter of bhakti, in terms of practical context and application. It's not just some intellectual study. In Bengal, there's a kind of practice called bhakti, taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they believe this, that. It's not some intellectual specimen to be studied like a butterfly. It's practical. So Prabhupada's giving so much context so that we can understand it deeply. Apart from that, Prabhupada's not usually pulling these things from nowhere, but the acharyas are commenting on these things also. And so often it's coming from right from the verse, but you're just reading the verse and you're seeing, okay, bhakti, dharma, but how much could be said about bhakti? How much could be said about dharma? How much can be said about any one of the words in any one of the verses? They all have unlimited meaning. There's an expression that's used in the academic world to unpack a word or unpack a verse. Just like you have your luggage and you have to unpack it. The luggage is useless. If you just unzip it, open it up, it's useless. You have to unpack it. And then this goes here, this goes here, this goes there, this goes there. Now it becomes useful to you. You have to, someone gives you something, a package. You don't even know what's in it. If you just open it, you don't know what's there. You have to unpack it. Then you see, oh, there's this, there's this, there's this, there's this. So each word has unlimited meaning, and the acharyas unpack these words. So when the word dharma is used, oh, so much, you could write 150 pages just about dharma, and that's only getting started. Kurukshetra. Just the one word, Kurukshetra, you could explain for weeks. Any word from Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked up one verse, Atmaramascha Muniyo, and how many ways did he explain it? 54? 64 different ways. Atmarama can mean this, Atmarama can mean that, Atma can mean this, 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 this. Chak can have these 14 different meanings. So many different meanings just from one verse.
Also, Maharaj, Prabhupada says that his purports are his ecstasies.
Also, while I'm thinking of it, it's not that these are mundane topics, that we're just talking about social this or political that. As soon as it's connected to Krishna, it's spiritual. Just like we don't separate Krishna from his name, his form, his qualities, his paraphernalia. So it's not that Krishna is spiritual, but his flute is material. Or that Krishna is spiritual, but the cow on which he's placing his hand is material. As soon as Krishna is there, everything becomes spiritualized. Or everything has a connection with Krishna, and as soon as that connection is excavated, then we see it as spiritual. So politics, economics, romance, intellectual issues, recreational issues, farming, medicine, everything, science, as soon as it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes a spiritual subject matter. And as soon as it's disconnected from Krishna, it becomes mundane. Just like here, we're talking about what makes for good speech. It should be short. It should be essential. It should be sweet. So you can learn that at a public speaking course. You can go someplace in Chowringhee and they'll give a You know, you pay some money and they'll teach you how to speak and they'll say, make it sweet, make it concise, make it this way, that way. And that'll be totally mundane. We're not interested in their course over there. But because the same subject matter is coming up in the context of the discussion between the Kumaras and Prithu Maharaj, now we're interested. When it comes to giving a PowerPoint presentation to a batch of executives about your latest product, that's not what we're interested in, how to give a good presentation for that. But when two great souls are speaking, then we're these topics of what makes for a good speech become relevant. We're hearing about how the gopis are dressed. We're hearing about Yashoda Mayi's earrings. Now, what kind of spiritual life is that, to hear about a woman's earrings? Right? I mean, there's so many. I happened to notice we were driving. There went through one district, and every place, everywhere you looked, there was another hoarding for jewelry. And this woman with a necklace, and this one with earrings, and this one. So now we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're hearing about some woman's earrings. And how the earrings are jangling, how they're moving. So what does that have to do with spiritual life? This is satyam param dhimahi. We're supposed to be meditating on the absolute truth, and now we're hearing about a woman's earrings. But because the woman is Krishna's mother, and because the earrings are moving while she's churning butter to please Krishna, we're interested. Someone said, otherwise, why should we be interested in such topics? Brahmacharis and sannyasis hearing about earrings. But as soon as Krishna is there, the whole topic becomes spiritual. Yeah.
Also, we see in Mahabharata, Vyasadeva speaks about pure devotees of the Lord. Is this for the very...
He speaks about pure...
Pure devotees of the Lord.
Pure devotees of the Lord, yes.
Is this for the very same reason that he also speaks about many other things?
Is it for the very same reason that he also speaks about many other things? If it were for the very same reason, he would be speaking the very same thing. It must be related, huh? I couldn't understand it either. You're saying, is he speaking about pure devotees of the Lord for the very same reason that he's speaking about other things?
No, Maharaj. Oh. I was saying that Vyasadeva is speaking about pure devotees of the Lord, Pandavas.
Yes.
And at the same time, he's also speaking about many other social factors, political factors, and diplomacy, yeah, and all that. So, is this the very same reason which you have mentioned now?
Yeah. Two reasons. One reason is, yes, that it's related to Krishna or the subject matter. And the other thing is because Vyasadeva is a little strategic. So he's trying to give Krishna katha, but he's putting it into the context of other katha that will attract people. People want to read about romance, people want to read about heroes, people want to read about all those sort of things. So Vyasadeva is going to tell them all sorts of things about those topics and slip in topics about spiritual understanding and ultimately Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Katha.
One last question, Maharaj.
Just like we heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, here in Calcutta, he staged some theistic exhibitions. And they were very big. I mean, it was like covering a huge area. And it had two sections. One section, there were mundane things. A map of India or, you know, all sorts of things were there. And the other side, spiritual things. Just to attract huge numbers of people. So everything was there. And when you came, then you'd get the spiritual thing. Prabhupada one time said we should start a newspaper. and just have ordinary news, and then one column, editorial column, where you give our conclusion, our Vedic understanding. So to attract people, we give them all the worthless news they're interested in, but then we slip in there, and here's why we're publishing. We want to tell you this. So that Vyasadeva is also following that kind of strategy.
Can I ask one last question?
Well, yeah.
Maharaj Prabhupada says that his purports are his ecstasies. But also we see that they are very much applicable to the people of Kali Yuga. So can you explain that, how he is able to accommodate the people of Kali Yuga?
How can I explain what?
How he is able to accommodate the people of Kali Yuga? How Prabhupada is able to accommodate the people of Kali Yuga?
To accommodate the people of Kali Yuga?
While giving his ecstasies.
Why he's? Because he's ecstatic. An ecstatic person, you know, from a person with money, money will come. From a person who's a musician, music will come. And from a person who's ecstatic, ecstasy will come.
Vyasadeva wrote all the Vedic literature.
It's very loud, so you have to hold it a little further.
Hare Krishna. So we are seeing in the fifth chapter of the first canto that Vedvyas is being chastised by Narad Muni, that you have told about other things, but you have not directly glorified Krishna. And at the same time, the context which you are discussing right now, we are saying that Prabhupada was trying to give all the things together. So,
but the target is Krishna. Vyasadeva and his other works mostly hid Krishna amongst so many other things. If you read, how big is the Mahabharata?
1 lakh verses.
1 lakh verses. And how big is Bhagavad Gita?
700 verses.
So it's pretty easy to miss the main theme. But in Prabhupada's books, you won't miss Krishna.
Yeah.
So it's always pointing our attention to Krishna and connecting everything else to Krishna. So it's not off target.
So you mean to say that even if you are telling about...
When Vyasadeva is being asked, you write about Krishna. So he can only write about Krishna. He can't write about gopis. He can't write about Yashoda Mayi. He can't write about Mahavishnu. He can't write about the material world. He can't write about the avatars. He can't write about the three modes of material nature. He can't write about anything else. He can only write about Krishna. Krishna doesn't mean Krishna alone. It means Krishna with his energies and Krishna with everything related to Krishna. But just not disconnected. We can write about music and it will be related to Krishna. You can also write about music in such a way that it's not related to Krishna. You could write about earrings in such a way they're connected to Krishna. You can write about earrings in such a way that they're totally distract you from Krishna. So it's simply a question of keeping Krishna as the focal point of attention. And in relation to Krishna, every other topic has value.
Mahabharata is written with, in that Krishna is also the focus.
The Mahabharata, Krishna is one of the persons, one of the figures, one of the, one of the great persons in Mahabharata. But in Mahabharata, it's not that wherever you look, it's Krishna, Krishna. Krishna's there, but not everywhere, and not with the... It's not made clear wherever you read who Krishna is. He's the friend of Arjuna, he's the son of Devaki, he's this, that. But it's not so focused on understanding who Krishna is. Krishna appears from time to time, But it's not made so clear who is Krishna. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, the whole Bhagavad Gita is meant for understanding who is Krishna, or Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole focus is Krishna. In Mahabharata, so many things. Yes. So many things that they say, if it's not in Mahabharata, it's not any place else. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you, in your lecture, you were speaking about the speech being concise. While a king also has to administer, then he should hear the problem and then give...
And he should hear the problem.
Hear the problem and then give the concise judgment as to this is what is to be done. But in situations while devotees or any individual is hurt by a situation, then he wants to share his emotions.
Yeah.
So then when we give a hearing or speak to such a person, he does not expect any concise... he just wants to speak out and calm himself.
Yeah, so that's sometimes there. Sometimes we have to hear people and they're not really saying anything, but just to make them feel better, we let them speak, and then once they've spoken, the problem is solved. That may be there also. But sometimes... you really want to get things concise. I'll give you an example. When I was on Padayatra, we arrived at Varanasi district. And at that time, this Ram Janaki Rat was going around, and there were a lot of communal disturbances as a result. And so there had been an order in Varanasi district, no ruts. No processions, no ruts. So we come with our whole group of devotees and the Didi card and so many exhibits, and at the Chungi, they stop us. You can't go. We're sorry, but there's an order, no ruts. And we have a program that night. So what to do? They say, we can't do anything, you have to go to the DM. So Loknath Maharaj and I went to the DM, we came to his office, and the DM is there, but he's busy, and he'll see you after some time. But today is a very busy day because the President of India is visiting Varanasi today, and dignitaries are flying in from every direction. But so he's very busy, but after some time he'll see you. Then he comes running out of his office. I mean, not running, but rushing out of his office because another dignitary that they didn't expect is coming, and now he has to go to the airport to greet the person. But as he's coming out of his office, he sees that the two of us are sitting there, you know, two sadhus are sitting there. So he says, come with me to his car. He says, come with me to my car. So he gets in his car, rolls down the window and says, what's the problem? So I start to explain that we'd been stopped at the Changi and that there had been this order. He stopped me in mid-sentence. He said, tell me in one sentence. But tell me in one sentence. So I thought a second, I told him what it was in one second, in one sentence. He gave a few orders, he said, don't worry Swamiji, everything's all right, and he drove off. That's what I meant. That at a certain level of efficiency, they get it down to that point. You just tell me, if you go to the Supreme Court, like you go to a court in America and they're writing briefs and they're writing arguments and they're writing this and they're writing that, and you read these briefs and they go on and on and on. If you read a brief submitted to the Supreme Court, it's so short. If they quote from the United States Constitution, they quote only the relevant words. They don't just quote, you know, the paragraph or anything, just the relevant words, just the relevant argument. They get it down to something very short.
and it has only the essential points. Because these men hear only the top cases, and they only decide essential questions. They don't just decide whether the money goes to you or the money goes to you. They want to see what is the essential constitutional issue that we have to decide, and what are the arguments on, you know, on for your case, and they want to see it. It's called a brief for that reason, that it's got to be brief. And you read it, it's like, it's mundane, but it's like wonderful reading when you read one of these briefs that's well written, because it's so much to the point. And then if they write a decision, again, it's so much to the point. Because they're not just meant for writing. The lower courts, they talk and they talk, and the judge says, well, this, that. And the lawyers say, well, Your Honor, this, that, and 20 years ago this, and on Tuesday that, and his brother-in-law this, and so many different things. But when you get to the Supreme Court, short and to the point. So it's not an absolute rule that you always have to, you can't give out more than three words, otherwise you're breaking the rule. But it's a virtue. Now, not every virtue is to be applied everywhere, but it is a virtue to be able to say what one means to say concisely.
Mm-hmm. Maharaj, in your previous lecture, the day before yesterday, you were making a point that the material world, if someone asks you to adjust your situation, then he's like an enemy. In the material world...
If someone asks you to adjust your situation, he's like an enemy. I don't remember that, but...
You were making a point that, like, the house is on fire, so then somebody says, okay, things will be all right. So trying...
Oh, if he doesn't... Okay. Someone who lets you sit there in your house while it's burning is your enemy. Okay.
So he doesn't speak that you have to surrender to Krishna, but he just tries to soothe the situation by... mere adjustments. By mere adjustments, like adjust your situation in this material world, things will be okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't ask them to surrender
so
to Krishna.
Then you're someone's enemy, that he's just saying, you adjust your material circumstances and you'll have a happy life. So he's your enemy.
You're making a point like that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, even in the devotee circles, when we are with devotees, sometimes the devotees may be in difficult situations.
Maybe.
In difficult situations, mm-hmm. but then we need to help him adjust the situations to facilitate his Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so the best thing is you speak about Krishna. Everyone's problem is from forgetfulness of Krishna. And as soon as we remember Krishna, then the problem is not there. Now, yes. So devotees encourage one another by reminding one another of Krishna.
But simultaneously, some material situations also may
what?
Have to, simultaneously,
yes.
Some material situations also may have to be addressed for him to be facilitated to practice Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so. But facilitated doesn't mean just by facilitating the material circumstances, everything becomes all right. Krishna consciousness has to be there. So if we just adjust the material circumstances, that doesn't really solve problems. Suppose the temple management, you get the accounts running nicely, you get the schedule running clockwork, you get everything going super efficiency, but people aren't Krishna conscious, then it may be materially a very effective organization, but it's a failure. Now, we don't want it a failure the other way, that the schedule is totally off and the accounts are being plundered and everything is a mess. We want both, that everything is run very nicely because people are thinking of Krishna. We were reading yesterday, Mahamanusmara Yujacha, think of me and fight. Well, so both things. It's not that artificially everything I have to make sure I say Krishna in every direction, in every statement. Gurudas Prabhu mentions that when he first came to Vrindavan, he's driving to Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada, and
Prabhupada's not saying anything, and they're just chanting. And finally, Prabhupada, you know, and he's wondering, what is Prabhupada thinking? What's Prabhupada going to say? You know, because they're going to Vrindavan, and it's his first time. Finally, Prabhupada says, cement. Cement. And then he's talking about how we have to get cement for the temple. So this is not a mundane topic. Although it wasn't what he was expecting. Instead of Ras Leela or Krishna Leela, he's Vrindavan Leela, cement. But that's also in relation to Krishna. So we don't artificially have to say, we need cement for Krishna. Krishna will be pleased if we get cement. We get the business done, but our focus is Krishna's service. Time? Oh, there's another. We do this again, I see. Okay. Finished. Thank you. Samapt. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
11:30, Maharaj will come.
So the next day, Swami Maharaj ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. So Maharaj will be giving Brahmachari class. So all devotees are requested to attend Brahmachari.